This episode of the Citadel Cafe is brought to you by listeners like you. Visit patreon.com/thecitadelcafe to find out how you can become a patron and help make this show possible. This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 284 for Wednesday, August 29th, 2018. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where my friends and I hang out to talk about the geeky stuff we are into. Back for doubleheader, Miss Megan Townsend, Nerdasmic, on YouTube and across all social media. Welcome back.
Hello.
We didn't have an epic pre-show chat because I really just talked to you last week.
Yeah, I mean, we did a little bit. Like, well, we always have a little bit of a chat about, like, personal stuff and going
spoilers,
stuff going on.
We have the gift
stuff.
For gab. That's why we podcast.
It's true. God, I feel like I feel like our podcasts always end up being the longest because we just don't stop talking.
Most of them. I remember being surprised one time when I edited a show that you and I had done, and it was like 55 minutes, and I was like, "Huh,
that's short.
That's unusual.
That's short for us." Yeah. Yeah. Very, very short for us. But yeah, no, we like to talk. And we also don't see each other for long periods of time.
No,
so.
Which is dumb because we live in the same city and the other co-hosts that I podcast with are all over the world. And yet you and I are across the harbor from one another. But anyway, I've been a hermit this summer. That's kind of my excuse. And speaking of, I have to let the audio listeners know there might be some technical glitches this week. We have yet another heat warning in Dartmouth, Halifax this summer. It feels like 40 degrees today, so I am unable to podcast without my air conditioner going. So if you can hear that hum in the background, I will do my best in post-production to get rid of it, but there's just nothing I can do. It was you guys listen to it or I can't make a show. That's kind of how it came down.
Crazy, crazy hot. It's unreal.
Yeah.
It's been like the hottest summer I think I've ever experienced in Canada.
And it has not been enjoyable. Like, I don't like hot weather to begin with. Not that I'm the kind of person that will wish summer away. Like, I enjoy the sunshine. I love the light. You know, I like hiking. My hikes over the last couple of weeks going out along the coast were lovely. I mean, it was a hot day, but it was 25 degrees. You know, like, it's normal for this time of year. But feels like 40 is not normal. That's not something that's happened in my lifetime.
Yeah.
You know,
not in Canada. That's not a thing.
No, I mean, sure. If you're in the desert, if you're in other areas, Florida, maybe, but not in Nova Scotia. Like, for people that don't know precisely where we are, we're 45 degrees latitude. We're halfway to the North Pole.
Yeah. We're like, it's. I think the hottest, I know it gets pretty hot in Alberta, but that's also due to, like, the Chinook winds and, like, where it's situated and how it's, like, super flat land, so it absorbs a lot of heat. There's a lot of asphalt, so I've felt, like, 35 in Alberta, like, in Calgary, but never here. Like, the most, like, the hottest I think I've ever seen it get here is, like, 22.
Mm.
Maybe it's been 25. I'm talking Celsius, by the way.
Yes, anybody in the U.S. The only thing I remember is that 28 Celsius is 82 Fahrenheit. Like, it's the reverse. So that kind of gives you the benchmark. Besides, you guys have cell phones for that. You can figure it out on your own.
Yeah, work it out. Yes. Those are the only places in the whole world who still uses Fahrenheit. And there's a reason for it. Like, I was talking about this with a friend the other day and how, like, different... you know, ways of measuring heat mm-hmm. still like there's Fahrenheit, there's Celsius, and there's also Kelvin. And I know Kelvin is more of like a scientific based thing, but each of them have their own specific need and necessity.
Yeah.
So,
well, for example, water freezes at zero and boils at 100 in Celsius. That to me makes sense.
Right.
But ask me if I'm cooking, if I'm going to be turning the oven on, I couldn't tell you what Celsius temperature to put it on. All of the ovens I've ever known my whole life have all been Fahrenheit.
Yeah. And all packaging is Fahrenheit too. I mean, to be fair, most packaging is probably printed and made in the States.
But still, like, I mean, yeah. there's a lot of stuff. I mean, and even, like, there's lots of Canadian companies, like McCain. Like, they're a large food company in
Canada. Yeah, and everything's in Fahrenheit. It's all you're in Fahrenheit. Right.
I think it just comes down to, like, the main manufacturers of ovens, you know, and what they decided was going to be the standard.
Right.
I'm curious. I'll have to ask Pixel Riffs next time I talk to him in Britain, or even Alistair, you know, where, like, what ovens in the UK are set at. I'm assuming Fahrenheit, like, you know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Interesting.
I don't know.
Speaking of, that's one of the things that has been keeping me quite busy over the last few weeks. We recorded the fourth episode of the Spawn Chunks, which is my Minecraft podcast with Pixel Riffs. So I haven't watched a ton. I have been watching some stuff, but not a lot outside of Minecraft-related things, because we've been putting a lot of attention into publishing the show and doing all that kind of stuff. And the small bit of news that I have this week is that the podcast is now available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and the Google Music Play Store. We were looking at Spotify, but Spotify so far looks like you have to pay to post it there, which yeah. I don't want to do. So for people that were looking for it on their podcatcher, if they had not copied the RSS feed from the spawnchunks.com, you can now just search for it in your podcast app, and it should come up just by name. Should be pretty straightforward to do that. Also, if you go to thespawnchunks.com and click into one of the episode show note pages, the subscribe links for iTunes, Android, and RSS are all right there by the podcast player. So, but that show's been going well. I really appreciate all of the positive feedback we've been getting. We've got a good little Discord community going now. And I know, because some people have told me, that they've actually flopped over and started listening to the Sizzle Cafe. So if you are coming in from the Spawn Chunks, welcome. I'm glad that you're here. Hope you enjoy this show as well.
Yeah. I haven't listened to it yet. I need to. Time is a very rare commodity, I feel like.
The selling ticket, I think, for the Spawn Chunks, for people that play Minecraft and like Minecraft, but can't watch Let's Play videos because it's distracting and you just end up sitting there watching them. Like, I can't watch Minecraft videos in the background. I get very distracted. Because it's such a visual thing, especially if someone's building something. Whereas right. the podcast, there is no visual element. Like, we're just talking Minecraft news, you know, community events, updates really has been leading the news cycle lately. So we talk about all that kind of stuff. And then, for example, this week we talked about resource packs, what they are, how to use them, how we feel about them, etc. And so right. we took a pretty dry topic and we got deep into it and I think made a decent, you know, conversation out of it. And this is the kind of thing that you can listen to on the bus, you know, while you're playing Minecraft and doing some menial, you know, mundane thing like mining something out that is just a big project, stuff like that. So right. we're hoping to hit that kind of mid ground where people that still want to consume Minecraft content, but they have to go to work or they have to, you know, drive the kids to soccer practice or whatever that happens to be. And we've also had a couple of questions from people in, I think, my live stream, and that is regarding the content. It is all family friendly. So Pixel Riffs, myself, and the Spawn Chunks podcast, all of the YouTube content that we produce and the podcast that we produce, it's all family friendly. Mm. We don't talk, it's not like meant for kids, so we talk quite technically about Minecraft. But there's no swearing and there's no vulgar jokes and things like that. I think Pixel Riffs even went back and edited one flub where it wasn't even a swear. It was just like, it was not a nice way to refer to somebody. We were talking about people being not nice on servers in one conversation. And he actually went back and edited out what he had said because he felt it was just off brand. I was like, cool. You know, like it's just nice that if you're an adult that is listening to this and you've got your kids in the car, you can just let it go. And Spawn Chunks.
Right, without having to worry about it, yeah.
And that's rare, I find. Both with streaming and Minecraft, there just seems to be this, when adults are into Minecraft, a lot of the time, it's very vulgar.
It's very, very vulgar. And like, my mom was really concerned, because my sister's 12, and my sister loves watching Minecraft videos. Like, my sister really likes watching, playing Minecraft. She usually does it on PlayStation, so that's where she usually plays.
She's on the Bedrock Edition?
Yeah. Yeah, but she's managed, like, she's able to figure out all kinds of redstone stuff. And I think she just watches a lot of tutorials.
Nice.
And I think she's managed to find a lot of pretty decent ones, but I'm always afraid that she's going to come across someone that's like really cursy and yelly, because the people that I watch purely for the entertainment of it who play Minecraft are the Achievement Hunter people, subsection of Rooster Teeth, and they are sweary McSwearingtons. Like, they just are always after each other. They're always swearing. The first couple of episodes they played of Minecraft together, they were all plastered. And it was funny. It's really entertaining to watch, but I was like, I don't want my 12-year-old sister watching that.
Yeah. Well, and I don't want to sound like a prude either, because like when I go to watch streamers and stuff like that, I don't care if someone drops an F-bomb here and there or they say something that's a little off color. If it warrants, like if you just died and you lost all your stuff, I'm not going to care if you swear. Like that's a pain, you know, like, or if something in a game, like if you're playing a horror game and something jumps out and the streamer like swears because they were startled, like that's funny. Like, you know, that's not, you know, it's when they're swearing every other word and they're being vulgar for the sake of being vulgar or derogatory. That's where I kind of draw the line. And honestly, I've found less problems with people that are vulgar and more with just people that are obnoxious, that just, they're like nails on a chalkboard. It's like, wow, how does anybody ever watch these people? And I'm not just talking about Minecraft, I'm talking about just streaming in general, because I've been kind of branching out on Twitch and trying to find new people to follow, and thankfully I've found quite a few people over the last little while that are, I'm going to call them balanced streamers. Like they do what they do. They have some nice normal chat rules, like, you know, no politics, no religion, and keep it no heavy sexual content, because it's not for, you know, because there could be kids watching, it's a video game, you know.
Right.
And I find that that's kind of the balance I like to strike. I mean, if they swear, whatever. If it's a lot of swearing, I might tune out, but most of the time people are pretty conscious of that, I think, at least the people that I've been finding.
Which is good.
Yeah, and when I do find someone, I don't remember their name. I do still follow them, but I don't watch them very much, and they have a funny handle that I can't remember. But they're articulate. They're funny, but they swear too much, and it distracts me from what they're doing. And I'm just like, nah, I'm not interested. Like, you're not saying anything clever. You're just swearing because you can't think of a different word right now. And so for me, I'm just like, well, that kind of takes me out of what you're doing. And so I end up tuning out and watching them if they're at the bottom of my list. You know, it's like, well, I really want to watch this video game right now, but it's this guy, and I don't really care for him.
Right.
I mean, I leave the explicit tag on the Citadel Cafe because sometimes my guests swear if they're very upset about what happened in The Force Awakens. sometimes I also just don't want to go back through an hour-long show and find the edit where someone dropped an F-bomb and edited it out. So I leave the explicit tag in there. We don't swear on purpose, but if it happens, it happens.
Yeah, I am a sweary person, like in my general conversation. Apparently, people who swear more often are more trustworthy. Apparently, it's a psychological thing. I don't know how that works out, but apparently that's the case. But I'm a pirate. Like I have a seriously.
I love, that's a great description.
Like, yeah, I'm a sailor. Like you just like, and it's been since I've lived in Nova Scotia, because I don't think, I mean, also I was a kid when I lived in Alberta, but like, you know, it's, you don't hear swearing as often. Whereas here, I feel like it's left, right, and center. Like it's all over the place.
It can be.
I wonder if that's like the Scottish ancestry, because I know Scots are pretty sweary.
Yeah, it could be.
This, like it's just a aspect of their culture, I guess.
Yeah.
Hopefully I don't swear too much on here. Now I'm like a little bit self-conscious.
No. Not that I've noticed. No. Anecdotally, I went to college with a few folks that were from Cape Breton, and they were pretty sweary.
Mm-hmm.
They were pretty sweary.
Yeah. And, you know, my family's from Cape Breton, so it's like, yep, you hear it often. You hear it enough.
That sounds like a delicious beer. My grandmother has enough wine in her. Can I have one too?
Oh, no, sorry. I'm trying to, like, open up my fizzy water really quietly, like, away from my microphone, so I'm sorry. Sorry.
That was the opposite of very quiet.
I'm trying to do it so far away and like really slowly.
Oh my God. So a funny story to relay. People that have listened to the Sponge Chunks will already know this, but go listen to episode 4. Johnny stopped the show in the first, I think we were in the news sections, and he just kind of stopped and said, okay. So for anybody that doesn't know, Joel is in Canada, and that noise in the background is a blue jay. that is out in his backyard. And I knew it was loud, but I didn't know that it was actually getting picked up and that it was loud enough and interruptive enough that, that Johnny was like, okay, we have to address this. and I knew it was getting louder and more frequent. I was like, okay, I'm reaching for my mic. I'm like, I'm just waiting for the opportunity to mute the mic where I either I'm done talking or Johnny's going to interject and I know he's going to have like a spiel where I can just mute it and then hopefully get rid of it. But we just, we never had the opportunity. So the Blue Jays in the podcast, and it is, they're a pretty bird, but man, they make a bad noise.
They do. It's they do. Rough. I'm sorry about the can. No, I really apologize. It's funny. I should know better.
What's that movie that came out lately that everybody had to be quiet in the theater?
A Quiet Place.
A Quiet Place. Yeah. It's like opening a can of pop in the Quiet Place, right? It's like,
sorry. I'm just gonna do it so far away from.
I'm just gonna tease you about it now. It's fun. Okay. But speaking of clean content and YouTubers that you can recommend, actually, for your sister because they're both Minecraft players.
Cool.
I'm not gonna be talking about Minecraft. This is completely a different game. But we've mentioned a couple times on the show that I've been interested in playing and have been unable to play No Man's Sky, which is a space survival adventure game.
Right.
And I have been watching Etho from Etho's Lab and Vintage Beef, goes by Beef usually for short, play No Man's Sky on YouTube. Both of these guys are Canadian, which I didn't know. I knew Etho was. I'm not sure how I found that out. But Etho's been doing Minecraft podcasts, or not podcasts, but Minecraft content forever. His current season 2 is on like episode 510. Both Vintage and Etho have over 1 million subscribers. Etho is actually just shy of 2 million subs on YouTube. So they're professional. Wow. And I think they clued in quite quickly that their Minecraft audience is young. So they don't swear. There's no lewd humor that I've seen in the content that I've watched. I have not obviously watched all of their content. It's kind of monstrous. And it might vary from game to game. Like their Minecraft stuff might be clean and their No Man's Sky stuff might be clean. But then if they're playing Monster Hunter or something else, they might say, all right, well, this is an older audience. Maybe we can get away with some other stuff here. I don't know for sure. But anecdotally, what I've seen, they're very clean. They're very pro. But I've been watching them play No Man's Sky. And watching it on Twitch is one thing because you're coming into someone's game partway through. They might be new to the game. They might be at a certain level here or there, but you kind of get the gist. You do sort of see the same things over and over again. The issue that I have with Twitch is a lot of people have put in a lot of hours and they're really far down the line and I'm lost. Like, I don't know what they're doing. I'm not sure how much gear they have, where they get that cool ship, like nothing.
Right.
Etho and Beef have been recording since minute one of their playthrough together, and they only play together. So these videos are the two of them. So immediately there's someone to talk to, which is entertaining. Beef has played the series before, back when No Man's Sky first came out, but there's been a huge amount of changes in the latest release. So he's kind of coming back to it for the first time. And the two of them are going through and playing. There's about 4 episodes now. I made a playlist. Etho doesn't have a playlist on his site, but I made a playlist so that people can find it easily.
Oh, but nice.
They're like 29 minutes, 25 minutes, give or take. Boy, do they leave you wanting more. It's like they're cruising through space and like, oh, wow, Etho, check out that planet. That looks amazing. Yeah, let's go check that out in the next episode. Ba-da, and then you're like, oh, son of a...
Oh, dang it.
And then they do it like Monday, Wednesday, Friday, from what I can tell. So it's only been going a week. There should be a new episode coming out some point today, but so far I've seen 4. And it is delightful. They have obviously known each other a while. They're both pros at making videos. And here's the thing that I find incredibly interesting and also impressive. They don't cut. So the full 25 minutes is them, if they do, it's really hard to tell. The full 25 minutes is them playing together for 25. Like they land on a planet, they have a thing to do, they're going around and doing stuff. They're talking to one another, but they're talking one another through the mechanics of the game or through, oh my gosh, I just found this really cool thing, check this out. And then they cut at the end of the episode. Now, they might end up doing some grindy material collection or trading or selling or something like that as a space station between episodes, but during the episode, it's one cut.
Wow. See, I find that so difficult. I can't talk consistently for like 25 minutes. Like when I edit my YouTube videos, I can't I can't stand to listen to myself for more than like 5 minutes at a time. I get bored watching myself. I get bored listening to myself.
Yeah.
So it's like, that's why I do all the jump cuts, because it keeps the eye visually engaged. But I guess when you're watching a game, it's a little bit different than when you're watching a person.
And it would be really jarring, because these games and these planets in No Man's Sky, if you're cutting without a proper wipe cut or something to indicate you're changing views, you'd be kind of lost. Like, which way am I facing now? Like, everything kind of looks the same. I do it with my Minecraft videos. Like, I'll put in like a swipe and a sound effect that kind of goes, whoosh, you know, when I cut from one thing to another.
I noticed that. I need to start doing that more often. That swipe noise is in a lot of YouTuber videos, and I actually really like it. It's almost become like a standard.
Yeah, it's definitely a standard in Minecraft. Videos. Yeah. What I like about it in Minecraft is that it indicates a passage of time.
Yes.
You know, if I'm in the same location, like if I'm decorating a stairwell or if I'm building something and I'm just cutting from one place to the next, I'll just do a straight cut. Like, it'll just be like, I'm looking at this, I'm looking at that, I'm looking at this again, and then we're done. But if I then go down to another area and I'm now at a different building, or I'm in a mine, or I'm doing something else, I use that swipe cut to say like, okay, so there's been a passage of time that's happened between one thing and the other. Because I find that it also communicates like, well, how did Joel get all this stuff in his inventory? It's like, well, because I took 20 minutes and I went and mined something out now that I have it. And in this particular, like in this week, I actually used, like I used old footage from last year and cut that together with new stuff. So it's like, I have to build a wheat field. That's kind of boring. I'll go do that on stream where I can at least talk to people and be entertaining, and then come back to it later in the video. So it took me a couple of days to put together the video. But with Etho and Beef on No Man's Sky, to get back to No Man's Sky, it's really, really interesting to feel as though you're watching a stream, but in a 25-minute YouTube video. And it's not a port. Like,
that's
cool. They're not streaming on Twitch. So what's nice about it is that not like every 10 seconds, they're not stopping to thank someone for the follow or thank someone for the bits, or like they're not acknowledging followers and chatting with a chat room that you can't see, because not that there's anything wrong with that. I like watching stream replays on Twitch, on YouTube as well, but they're talking to one another, which I think is a big thing. Like, so you were talking about, you know, you just kind of talking on your YouTube channel on your own for 25 minutes.
Yeah, well, really, it's me sitting in a room on my floor talking to my camera. So you kind of feel a little bit crazy. And I think you, at some points, I kind of realized, I'm like, I'm doing the weirdest thing right now. Like, behind the camera, like the behind the scenes of making a YouTube video is so bizarre. You feel really, really schizophrenic.
Yeah, well, it's how I feel in a Twitch stream when there's no one in my chat room. You know, someone can always come and watch that video later. Like, it's up for a good 2 weeks, I think, on Twitch after the fact. So I have to pretend like I'm talking to people and talk about what I'm doing. But I have no questions. I have no comments in the chat that are springboarding me to other thought processes. Like, it's just me and the blocks in front of me.
Right.
And I find I know when to quit my streams, because after about 2 hours, I'm kind of done. I'm kind of done talking. I stop talking. I realize I'm just sitting here placing blocks and not really saying much. And I know that I'm kind of winding down. I'd be really curious to talk to Etho and Beef about the process of making these videos, how they decided to do it. There has to be a certain amount of planning where they're just like,
there's gotta be,
we're going down to this planet, and when we decide to leave this planet, that's when we cut the episode on purpose.
Yeah.
You know, it's genius.
It depends on how long they've been doing stuff together as well. Like, if they've been streaming together for a long time, they probably just, you get a feel
get
for
a
each
feel for
other's, the way other people react and how they play and everything. So,
yeah. And you can hear it. Like, you can hear like, oh, I don't know, Beef. Like, are we done here? Yep. I think we're done, because it's the end of the episode. Is stuff like that is pretty obvious. I'm kind of surprised. I notice it more now. With Etho, he definitely sounds Canadian, whereas
he has that stereotypical Canadian accent.
He does. Hey. He sounds like a French. Well, he sounds more like a French Canadian, really. I don't know for sure. I'd have to look it up. But when you watch Etho's older stuff, and this is how I found Etho, was I was looking to build a slime farm, and I inserted myself into his season 2 somewhere around like episode 160-ish, because I found a slime farm build that he had done way back in the day. I'm not realizing how old this content was until I watched the video. I was like, wow, okay, this is a really old version of Minecraft. It's like 1.7 or something.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh,
wow. So, yeah. So it's been, well, I mean, it's episode 150 out of 500, 510 being published August 15th, 2018, right? So that's the most recent. And I'm 400, you know, 350 episodes back. So listening to him back then, much like if you ever go back and listen to any YouTuber or Twitch person back when they first started, myself included, they're really subdued. And they're really just, they're playing the game and they're trying to sound interesting. And it's like, you don't quite have that, you know, 1,000-hour confidence of talking about the game and ad-libbing about stuff and making up cool things that happen that you can then focus on. Like on my stream the other day, there was a bat that just wouldn't leave us alone in the wheat field. So we found a name tag and we named him Wheat Bat. And it became a mini game because like I had to catch this bat. Like, you know how hard it is to throw a name tag on a bat in Minecraft? It is not easy.
I'm sure it is.
Yeah, and no sooner did we say that was really difficult than we had another one show up on the bridge, so I took a name tag and named him Bridge Bat. And I managed to tag that in, like, 45 seconds. It was really fast.
Wow.
He kind of landed, and I was like, ha, gotcha! But it became this running joke now, you know, even in the Discord and in the Twitch chat. But
I
stuff
just
like that.
Bats running around.
Yeah, like if you don't know to kind of, you know, grab onto something like that, then it becomes difficult. But I really highly, highly recommend people that are interested in No Man's Sky. You're going to watch Beef, who's played it before, but it's changed so much, it's pretty much new to him. And then Etho, who's like learning the controls in the first episode. Like it is brand new to him. And so there's a lot of discovery. There's a lot of honest surprise and just awe at what's happening in front of them. They get excited when they can take their ships off for the first time. Like there's all these really cool discoveries. And if you can't play the game, like I can't play the game, then I would highly recommend checking out Etho and Beef. And if you've got, you know, Minecrafters in your family, then check out their other stuff too. They've been doing it for quite some time.
Cool. I'll definitely give them a look.
Yeah, I have some people that I could recommend for your sister too, for Minecrafters.
Oh God, I'm sure she'd love that. Yeah. Now she doesn't really watch Twitch. She's not a Twitch person. She doesn't really watch streams. She does watch a lot of YouTubers.
YouTube is usually better for Minecraft.
Right.
Less of a minefield, if you pardon the pun.
Right. That's funny.
So that's what's been on my small screen. What has been on yours?
So I was recently introduced to the amazingness that is Detroit Become Human, the new PS4 exclusive from Quantic Dream. I was over at a friend's place, and I'd seen ads about it everywhere. Like I'd seen like not even like video ads, just like photo ads, kind of all over, just online. And I was like, that looks cool. That's cool. I thought it was like a TV show, like an animated TV show, but no, it's a game. It could be a TV show. I kind of want it to be a TV show because it's just so, there's so much they could do with it. So it's set, it was released this year in May of this year. It's from the same studio who did Beyond Two Souls with Ellen Page and Willem Dafoe.
Okay.
And the Heavy Rain game. I've never played Heavy Rain personally, but it has apparently a very profound lasting impression on a lot of people.
I've certainly heard of it. I'm sure I'd recognize the art.
It's very emotional, I guess. It's very it's heavy, we'll say. Like the subject matter is very heavy. But yeah, it's set 20 years in the future in the city of Detroit. And I guess Detroit was, you know, in its heyday, a pretty like, you know, automotive. Like it was basically like the home of automotive science, I guess. Yeah. At one point, it was like really good for, you know, developing new vehicles and stuff. So in order to kind of give it a new life, the character in this game, I don't even remember what, I haven't even met him yet, but there's a man who's developed this company called CyberLife and created androids, essentially, like fully sentient, not sentient, fully functioning, you know, human looking androids. So they look exactly like people. So the whole thing is done in mocap. The only indicator that they are not human is that they all have like a circular LED on their right temple.
Okay.
And it changes color based on what they're doing. So blue is like a general state of being. Sometimes it flashes if they're computing something or thinking about something. There's yellow for like kind of warning or concern, or when they're trying to process something as well. Maybe thinking about it a little more intensely. And then there's red for like stress, and it will blink at different frequencies. And it's you can kind of always tell what they're thinking, even if their faces are a little bit blank, which is really cool. Mm. And it is amazing. It's very narrative based. It's very cinematic. So for those people who like action shooters, things like that, it's probably not for you, but there's enough action even in just the cinematics that it keeps it really, really interesting to watch. Mm. And the structure of the game is really, really well developed. So it feels like you're watching a movie that you're making the choices of.
Would I be correct in comparing it to something like Mass Effect when you're choosing dialogue interaction, but obviously not the shooting part of Mass Effect?
No, it's kind of, but like 10 times more detailed. Like okay. There are, it's like there are between 40 and 45 noted endings.
Wow.
Of this game, depending on how you decide to play.
Choose your own adventure on steroids.
Exactly. It's exactly like that. And Quantic Dream is really good for that. Like Beyond Two Souls had a lot of endings as well. There's a lot of different ways things could go. But I guess this one has made it even bigger. And they have like what's called like a flow chart system where like at the end of every single chapter that you play, because there's sectioned off into different chapters where you play one of three different characters. So you're playing three characters evenly throughout the course of the game. But there's a flow chart schematic where you can see where you could have gone, and all the different possibilities. And some chapters are a lot bigger than others. Like some have a pretty linear path that you kind of need to follow. But others are huge. And like, there's one where you have an option of hiding out in like an abandoned house and a car or in a motel, and how that would have branched off at different things. And then depending on what you choose in one chapter will affect what things that happen in different chapters, and like that can affect the outcome of the entire game, and it depends on how people react to you. And it is insanely detailed, not just in story but also in animation. Like the look of it is stunning. It is amazing. Like it looks like Earth. It doesn't look like anything that's totally out of the realm of possibility. There's still normal cars. You see all the overpasses of Detroit. You see like, you know, parks and things. There's still trees around. It's only set like 20 years in the future, literally from like today.
Right.
Like the first scene happens on August 14th, 2038, literally 20 years from now.
Right.
I
really like it when sci-fi does that, when they don't push like super like Star Trek Next Generation. I mean, that's fun too, but there's something really visceral about like, I think, Michael Crichton does that really well.
Yeah.
He takes existing science or existing science theory and just says, what if this just goes to the point where it's true or doable? And how does that affect us now or 5 years or 10 years or 20 years from now?
Yeah. And it's so interesting to see, because like, I don't know, in my brain while I'm watching it, I know this is fiction, but I'm like, this could possibly be a quantifiable future for us. 20 years down the line, possibly, maybe, if someone's able to push science that far. I don't know, I was talking last week how I'm like kind of afraid of androids and how like robots are going to take over the world and we're all going to die. This kind of plays into that fear a little bit, but it's also super interesting. It's like so interesting that I can't look away. but it's so good. And it's kind of more discussing like what it means to be human. So the premise of the game is you play as these three different androids, each on a different like story, like on a different story path. And I'm assuming I haven't finished the game yet. I'm assuming the idea is they all kind of converge at the end and, you know, cross paths and something epic is going to happen. That's kind of the way that the game's leading up. I'm about halfway through of my playthrough currently, and I'm playing with a couple of different friends. So we're, my friend Becca, who owns the game, she's taken on one character. My roommate has taken on someone else, and I've taken on, in my opinion, the best boy. His name is Connor. He's my favorite character.
So that's pretty cool. So you guys are making this. You as players are making decisions for specific characters. So when the character's play scene comes on, you hand the controller to the person that is taking on that role.
Yes, and they essentially have full reign. Now we can ask advice from each other and be like, what do you think we should do? And especially Becca, who's played this game before multiple times, she kind of knows what to expect, but in order to go into like the different scenes and how things play out, a scene that I played as Connor went way differently from the last three times she played it. She was like, I've never seen that outcome happen in that scene before. I do not know how you did that. That was amazing. Because like, it's like depending on how, like what you choose to do. And it's so subtle. Like you actually never know what's going to happen unless you've played through the game so many times that you can actually memorize how things will go.
Well, and then what's the fun in that, right?
Exactly. But like, you do not know what's going to happen every single time you play.
So when you're given choices, you know, like something happens in front of you and you as Connor have to make, you know, a decision. Are the three choices vastly different? Like run left, run right, or stand right where you are?
It's more dialogue options. So like in the first scene, Connor is like an investigative robot. So he's basically, you know, he's helping out with crime scenes. He's like he's an analytical android. He's able to do like, you know, on site, you know, sampling for like, you know, fluids or blood or whatever.
So I think that's the trailer that I saw from E3 like last year or 2 years ago or something like that.
Yeah. So that's Connor's trailer. So he's essentially trying to save a little girl from a hostage situation who has been taken hostage by her family's android who has gone what they call deviant. So the deviant androids are androids who become sentient. There's an error in their programming that makes them feel more human emotions. So they're not able to be as rational. And they often act out. Either in self-defense or, you know, crimes of passion and things like that, which is very an un-android-like thing to do.
Right.
And something that's interesting that I haven't noticed yet, there's been no talk about the law of robotics. I know that's a thing going on, but Asimov, they do mention, but they do mention like the Turing test at different points as well, mm-hmm. and how like, you know, none of the androids have been able to pass a Turing test completely. But how, like, you know, deviant robots are usually dismantled right away, or if they can be, because they're kind of a danger to society, basically. So Connor's whole thing is that he's in charge of investigating deviant androids and trying to find out why it's happening and stopping why it's happening. And then you have Kara and Marcus, who are both deviant androids going on their own paths. Kara is she's very domestic. She's almost like very maternal. She's trying to save a little girl from a domestic abuse situation. And Marcus is trying to figure out a place for himself now that he has become deviant. So it's sort of like them trying to find their own spots in humanity, I guess, or trying to blend in with humanity and trying to find solace. While Connor is trying to like solve the whole problem. But depending on how you play him, he can go a bunch of different ways. They could all go a bunch of different ways, which is so interesting. Depending on you as the player, can influence the choices and how these characters will end up becoming. So Connor is in the opening scene, he's trying to save this little girl, and there's, you can scan like the other people you're interacting with, mostly other androids. So this particular android you're trying to talk down, essentially, depending on what you do, can affect the outcome of that scene. So there's either one scene where the android can fall off the roof with the little girl and your mission has failed. There's another scene where you can save the little girl, but both of you and the android go down. There's a scene where you die. There's a scene where like Connor dies. There's a scene where just the android dies, but it all depends on how you decide to play it. So there's four different options, and it can be like you can speak to the hostage, you can pull out a gun, you can try and reason with them, you can try and persuade them, you can guilt them. There's a bunch of different ways. It's all dialogue based on how the scenes go.
I'd be really curious to see someone that might have professional training in like hostage situations playing the game and seeing like how their choices, like how their professional choices in a real situation like that, if they chose the game, how that would pan out. I mean, not necessarily that you'd want that as a game. if that was your day job, you might not want to come home and do the same thing.
Exactly.
It seems like there are real consequences right away for really basic.
They
choices.
Are. 100%, absolutely. It's so it's not like it. Not only are you going to get it a consequence right away, but it's also going to be a consequence down the line as well.
Yeah, which is like, which is a nice way to communicate to the player. Like, you have to think about everything you do.
But sometimes you don't have time to think about it. Sometimes you have to. There's timers on something. Some of them are timed. Not all of them, but some of them are timed. So it's like a really react in the moment sort of situation, and it is intense. And I'm playing on casual mode, and I'm just like, oh my god, what do I do? Like, there's been times when I've hit the pause button. I'm like, okay, I gotta think about this for a second. They're like, and like both Bethley and Becker are just like, you're ruining it. You're supposed to be like using it like in real time. And there's also quick time events as well. So like, say you're doing a chase, you're trying to chase someone. There's a scene where Connor is trying to chase a deviant android, and you know, you have to jump over move through people and jump over things and, you know, dodge bullets and whatever. And yeah, and depending on how you can get these quick time reactions fast enough will determine on your success.
Yeah,
it's slower on casual mode, thank god, but it's still heckin' fast.
Yeah,
when you're stressed out, you're just like, I don't know, use my hands, like, don't know what to do.
And probably a nice break from a lot of the talking head, you know, not that it's bad, but like a nice action kind of sequence helps break things up a little bit. And I've been watching some video content, some gameplay content from the new Spider-Man from Sony, and they have similar situations where rather than getting the player to do like a bunch of really complicated stuff, you know, it's Spider-Man chasing a helicopter through downtown Manhattan. And you just have to do a bunch of these quick time things, like press A at the right time, press, you know, X at the right time, et cetera, or triangle or whatever it is. And what ends up happening is this really rewarding sequence. Like, if you hit all these things, then the animation that follows, you don't have to do anything. You don't have to do any special button combos. But Spider-Man just does like backflip, side swipe, you know, touch, like runs sideways on a couple of windows and then leaps into the air and like, all just because you're getting the timing right. And it just makes you feel badass
as a
game player. I've seen that in Batman Arkham stuff as well.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's pretty cool. And it does break up the kind of monotony, but the game is designed in such a way that it's very, very well structured. So like in particular scenes with Connor where you're, you know, you're at a crime scene, you need to listen to a debrief. You can also do other things.
Oh, cool.
So like you can go around. So like, so you know, you have this guy named Hank, Lieutenant Hank Anderson, who's essentially like a detective who's responsible for this case, and Connor is his android essentially. Like, they're working together to sort of figure this out. So he becomes either a friend or foe to you depending on how you relate to him. And so while you're at this, you know, you're at a murder scene where this guy was murdered by his android. You know, while they're going through a debrief, you can hear like, you know, what neighbors thought about him, like what he was perceived as, things about his life and things while you're going around and looking at all the evidence. So you're kind of killing two birds with one stone. So even though people are talking like during scenes, you can still do things around and explore your environment while it's happening.
Cool.
So you're not just standing there like, okay, I'm just a lump, you know, not doing anything. It makes it a lot more enjoyable and a lot more engaging to play through. And so every character has like their own sort of ability. So Connor has the ability to reconstruct crime scenes. So based on how many clues you manage to find on things and you know, how many samples you're able to take, you can reconstruct like backwards what happens in a crime scene and sort of deduce and put pieces together. And then you have to kind of, it's almost like a puzzle. And then Marcus is a character who can, it's called pre-construct. So he can kind of guess a path to go somewhere before he goes there to figure out what's going to work. It's almost like a puzzle where you have to figure out where your path is meant to go. Like, you know, if you're trying to scale a building, what's the safest way for me to go?
Right.
Beforehand. So it's very, there's a lot of different mechanics to it, which keeps it really engaging, really visually engaging. And each of the characters, their chapters are split up. So like, you know, you play as Connor in the first chapter, and then you play as Marcus, and you play as Kara, and then maybe you're back to Kara and then go to Connor. So it's each character has a linear story, but you're playing them at different times. So it keeps you interested and it keeps you visually engaged, and all of their chapters have something different to do. So like, you know, one of Kara's first chapters, it's like, you know, some of them are kind of boring where you're just doing like house cleaning and things and sort of exploring your environment and learning things about the characters that you're taking care of, I guess, in Kara's case. Or, you know, like when you first see Kara, she's already been owned by this family, by this father and daughter, and she would just came back from repair. So, and they had to say, we had to reset her memory because she was really badly damaged, and you got to figure out why she was badly damaged and why she was reset.
Right.
And she's kind of learning her environment all over again, and figuring out what's going on. And, it's amazing. Like I've been so interested in it. Fun fact though, as well, the guy who plays Connor, his name is Brian Deckard. He's also a Twitch streamer.
Oh, cool.
So he's actually played, Detroit Become Human on his stream, and his now wife, who's also a character in the game. They've done a couple of stuff together, a couple of things.
Oh, neat.
They play together, and they've played a bunch of different times, and sometimes they'll cosplay as their characters, and they're super, super into the game. They both really like it. I think it's Brian's first game that he's been in, but he's an actor in a bunch of other things as well, but he spends most of his time Twitch streaming. So he's very, very engaged in the community, and he's very, you know, really into like talking to fans of the game.
Oh, very cool.
Which is really nice. He's very accessible, I guess, in that
yeah,
sense.
Yeah, that's a genius marketing plan too. Like
in it
terms
is,
of
yeah.
Getting people to be able to interact with, because I mean, like you don't really see that very often from, say, Hollywood. You know, we've got
movie.
You don't necessarily see, you know, Henry Cavill just hanging out with fans, unless it's like a big, you know, raffle to sell a ticket to Mission Impossible or,
yeah,
you know, or what's happening right now. I saw an ad. Will Smith is doing something with Omaze, I think, or
yeah.
Or for school. Not Omaze. It's either Omaze or for, he's doing some sort of school educational charity thing. But his
right.
here's the thing that'll make you feel old. He's going to be 50 in September.
I know.
And so for his, so this contest is like you get to hang out with him at his 50th birthday party, but it's all cool, and it's a cool thing to do to raise money, because they end up raising hundreds of thousands of dollars for charities that are
yeah.
well worth it, right? But you don't usually see just someone popping out on the street and be like, hey, let's hang out and talk about Superman.
Let's hang out.
You know, have someone just, you know, because they usually can't. I mean, and just Twitch would give you that opportunity to do that without putting yourself in a mob of fans. Like,
it's true.
Having
yeah.
a very busy chat room is very different yeah. than being at a cafe trying to talk to fans about the game or something
and
like
he's,
that.
And he's not even like a huge Twitch streamer either. Like, he only has like a, like, you know, little, like, around like the 100,000 mark of followers.
Right. Like, not in the
or
millions.
Subscribers.
Or people,
he's not
yeah.
in the millions, like, you know, Markiplier, you know.
Yeah.
Whoever, right? Like, he's relatively small as a streamer, but
well, I can see it being a really interesting game to stream too. I mean, it's very pretty. It is
it's
beautiful,
beautiful
game.
And like some of the design stuff, like what I like about it feels alive. Like when you're walking through the environment, there are people, there's no like repeated, you know, actions or anything. Like everyone has like, there's no idle animations. There are very natural idle animations, but it's not like someone repeating the same idle animation like five times. There's actually people moving around the environment.
That drives me nuts when you've got like a character talking and they've made the same hand gesture three times in the same sentence. And you're just like,
yeah.
Come on.
This does not feel like that at all. Like you're walking through a park and you see a bunch of kids playing in a playground and some of them are spinning around and one falls over and they're like, now they're running around and like you can
wow.
stand there and watch them for 5 minutes and they're going to be doing something different. As you're walking through, there's a guy, like there's a scene with Marcus where he's going through a park, just like, you know, in the shopping district. And like, you can see a couple meet each other. You know, one of them is texting and then one of them meet up and they give each other a hug and then they go sit on a bench and they have a conversation. It's a silent conversation, but like their motions are really natural.
Right. Yeah.
There's another guy running, you know, with his Android and, you know, they're having a conversation and, you know, like they're like, there's, you know, a natural like pat on the back and you can see, you know, people just mulling about in a really natural way. There's the reflection of the puddles on the ground, like, cause it's kind of rainy. It's like a rainy November day when Marcus first is introduced. You can see like the reflection of like the skyscrapers on the ground in the puddles. You can see like the outline of wet footprints, just depending on how the light hits. It's beautiful. Like the lighting design, the game design is fabulous. And then, The sound design is also incredible. There's a one scene where one of the characters has a damaged audio chip, so they can't hear anything. Like, you can hear, it's like muffled and like distorted sort of sound. So it sounds like you're, you know, listening to it with really, really intense noise canceling headphones on. Like right. The sound, like you can kind of, you can, you're aware that there's noise happening outside of you, but it sounds really foggy.
Right.
And then as soon as the chip is repaired, it goes silent for 2 seconds and all of a sudden everything is really loud and you can hear everything. And it's, you know, it's like you're coming out of, you know, out from being underwater for a long time. And it's lovely. Like just like the attention to detail in every single aspect of this game is it's breathtaking. It really is. Like you can spend 5 minutes, like, you know, not even paying attention to the game and just looking at the scenery because it's so detailed.
The animation and the acting that I've seen in the trailers is phenomenal.
It's great.
Especially because I went looking specifically for gameplay trailers. Because sometimes you'll see a cinematic trailer and it'll be amazing, but it might not be what's in the game. But a lot of the trailers for this game are gameplay content.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the three we've linked down below
and
the show notes are all like gameplay trailers. And there's a bunch of different trailers. Like you get the opening scene with Connor, you get, you know, Kara's scene and how things could change, like all in like the flow chart. You can see the flow chart example of things.
Yeah.
And it, like what I like about like the content matter, like the themes behind it, I really like as well. And I think it's a very, again, like poignant thing to discuss. Like it talks about concepts of racism, classism. You know, like there's one scene where an android gets on a bus and like there's an android compartment on like the public transit system and right. They're all standing up in the back, whereas all the people, like the humans, get to sit in the front.
Right.
So it's a nod to, like, you know, back in, you know, when Rosa Parks was
segregation and stuff like that. Yeah.
Segregation and everything. So it's very interesting. And there's like concepts of slavery and I don't know. It's taking themes that we've talked about before and bringing them into the light again.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of talking about like the moral question of like, is this appropriate? Is this a thing that we as humans should do? What is humanity really? Like, mm-hmm. How can you define it? And so it gets very deep in its subject matter, but also at the same time, like you can just sit it, play it and enjoy it. And, you know, at a surface level and be like, yeah, it's a good story. It's cool. And not think about it too much. But I overthink everything and I've just been like thinking so deeply into this thing. And it's like, man, this would be such a great concept. And I was talking to someone at work about it and they were just like, I was like, part of me would love to see this be a thing because the ability that, you know, some people would, you know, like for people who have accessibility needs, like being able to have like an in-home, like a live-in-home android nurse, essentially, who can help you go to the bathroom and who can, you know, give you your medicine and cook for you because you can't, or like help you down the stairs if you can't. You know, that would be ideal for a lot of people, I think, and be able to have someone to talk to, because like there, Marcus is an accessibility android who helps a wealthy painter who's in a wheelchair. He's an elderly man who's in a wheelchair, so he basically is like a companion to him. Like he'll give him his medicine, he'll talk to him, and they all have personalities too. Like they are like programmed with personalities, so some of them can be very sarcastic, some of them can be very funny. Like nice. I love Connor because Connor's just very dry. Like the way he talks is just very, very dry. And he tries to, like, at one point he tries to wink and be like, yeah, I'm kidding, but it doesn't come across very well. And it's just sort of funny. He's just like, he's like a newborn puppy kind of. He's just not really sure how to react. And at one point he's sitting in a chair and he just like looks really uncomfortable, like just so out of place. And he's just an awkward puppy boy. I don't know. Nice. I love him. He's great. But this, it's good. It's I would highly recommend it to anyone. And even if you don't have a PS4, like just being able to watch Let's Plays of it. Having already played some of it, I get kind of frustrated when I'm just like, oh, don't do that thing. It's not going to end well for you. But you can see, like, you know, it's interesting to see the different choices that people would make. So my roommate has already watched one full Let's Play. So she knows at least what happens in one person's Let's Play. Or in their narrative. We don't know what's going to happen in our narrative yet. I think she knows the basic idea, but exactly what's going to go down, she's not sure of, because it depends on the player. And then one guy she was watching last night, I came home and she turned it off. She's like, no spoilers, because I don't want to be spoiled for anything.
Right.
But she was like, he did things very, very, very different, we will say. Like, so different. but I'm kind of afraid how things are going to end for him. So it's like, okay. So it has an intense replay value as well. Like, you know,
which
most
is cool.
Games you play it, like, yeah, you know, bidding to get an end, you can just leave it. But this has, for a narrative game, like, I find most narrative games you play once and that's it. This has the most and like amazing replay value I've ever seen.
Well, it's really complex, and right? I mean, I've not finished my second playthrough, but I certainly got 4 to 5 hours into my second playthrough of Assassin's Creed Black Flag. Mm. And that's a deep story. It's linear, but it's a deep story to the point where if you haven't played it in 5 years, you forget. Like, you don't really remember what nugget you get next and how exactly, you know. And it's a bit of an open world, so you can still kind of pace yourself a little bit differently than you did before and work some things out. But if you're just going in for the story, like, it just, I forget certain things that I did in that game. You know, I'm not whizzing through like, oh yeah, no, I got to go here. It's, I was like, oh crap, how the heck do I get past this point? You know?
Yeah. And it's cool in the flowchart. You can see, like, depending on certain choices that you make, how it unlocks something else in a future chapter. And then flowcharts for that chapter will be like, oh, hey, you remember this choice you made here? That's how it affected everything else. So it actually ties back, so you can see exactly what your choices have unlocked, which is amazing. But like you can kill a character in the first chapter. Like, Kara can die in her opening scene, and you have the whole game without her at that point. How is that going to look? That changes everything.
Right.
That changes the whole narrative of everything. And so it's like Game of Thrones, where literally no one is safe.
Right.
Which also makes it super interesting. So it's like, games like The Last of Us, or no, not The Last of Us, Until Dawn is what I'm thinking of. Until Dawn was advertised as like a true, like, butterfly effect game, when really, like, it's a very linear story and there's only one ending, but your choices determine who's there at the end.
Right.
Really, that's the only ending, but there's like so many different ways this game could go. One thing I have to complain about it though, the controls kind of suck.
Oh, that's too bad.
The a little bit. You get used to it. You get into it, but it's the same stick that you use to control your camera is what you use to interact with objects as well. So it gets kind of wonky. You're kind of just like, yeah, what am I doing?
Yeah.
Depending on how you push it up, or push it up or down or left or right or whatever. Some characters can only walk. They don't run, so you're kind of just slowly taking your time going through things. When, like, in the first scene, it's like a very, you know, literally a life or death situation, and Connor's just like, I'm just gonna saunter through this house. So it's a little crappy in that sense, where you can't hasten unless it's, you know, it's quick time events. Like, you have very, very specific moments where you can just walk, and so you're just going slow, or you're walking behind a character that's really slow, so you're just like, oh my god, okay. And so, you know, for me, who's very impatient, I'm just like, I just want to get to the thing. It really forces you to kind of take your time through it. And the camera angles really suck, because the controlling the camera is terrible. Because they've actually used a camera to sort of film the parts of the environment that they want you to see for the best effect. So it literally is like a movie where you're seeing exactly what they want you to see, and you can adjust the camera slightly. But you can't, like, you know, it's really hard to really to get a feel for your whole environment, unless you're like scanning a room or something, in which case it's a little bit different. But
and that would hinder replayability. Like, if it's the fourth time that you've seen this scene, you're still engaged, but you'd maybe want to look around the room a little bit more because you've heard the dialogue before or stuff like that.
Well, I mean, like, no, not really. I still feel like the playability is there. Because again, it's all based on your choices. So, like, environmentally wise, like, it's everything looks so nice that it's forgivable. Like, but it's trying to figure out how to move your camera and move at the same time. You're kind of just like, like, this feels kind of weird. And some characters move very quickly. Like, you have a very, very small window in which you can react to something. And some characters move faster than others. So, like, Marcus is a speedy Gonzalez. Like, you move him 2 feet or, like, you know, an inch from, you know, an object that you're interacting with, and like the interaction option is like flashing because he just moves so quickly. And he has such a small window of which he can actually grab something. So that's kind of annoying. So Bethley's been playing and she's like, okay, all right, Marcus, like, stop. Like, she wants to stop. He keeps going like 2 seconds after you let go of the analog stick. or like for, you know, like a millisecond afterwards. So it kind of messes you up a little bit. So yeah. that's kind of an annoying part of it. But I know game controls are wonky, and I think in most games, and it's also been a long time since I've held a controller in my hands, because I'm usually doing Let's Plays.
They can be. I remember really enjoying the camera control and the controllers in the second Arkham Batman game.
But, yes, I heard those are actually really good.
But not at first, because they're tweaked from the first one. So Arkham City is different from Arkham Asylum. And right. So you're used to one, and you go to muscle memory, and it starts to do some stuff very differently. And it was frustrating. But then you realize quite quickly, no, this is better. Like, and it's a tough thing, because like you want the camera on the action for Batman. You want the player to be able to spin the camera around to see who's coming up behind them. So they really balance in that game. You're controlling it to see what's happening, but then when you're doing an action, like, you know, to be blunt, breaking someone's leg as Batman, the camera will quick pan to show you the best angle. You know, it gives you the action movie shot of the slow-mo snap, you know, and he's like,
that's pretty much what this does too.
And what that does also is for you as a player is it kind of makes you go, oh, like in your chair, you're like, oh, I'm sort of glad that I saw that. But I mean, I feel really badass right now, but wow, that was kind of gross, you know?
Yeah. No,
and if you didn't have that angle, then you wouldn't have that experience. But I haven't played a lot of console gaming. And I haven't played anything on the next generation of consoles. I've only ever played on Xbox 360. So the beauty and the engagement of the games is limited to what was out with that, you know, that particular console generation, which is too bad. Like, I'd love to have a console, but I'd take a look at the cost of them, and it's like, you know, I think I'd rather just put money into a PC where I could play all kinds of different games as opposed to just games that came over the console. So, I mean, it would be different. I don't know, like at some point, like my Blu-ray player and stuff like that is kind of on the fritz now. So it would make more sense, you know, to have something like a PS4, you know, down the line, because then I would be able to use it as a home entertainment system and a console. But I also, I mean, I know you can stream from PS4s and things like that, but I kind of like the engagement that I get when I play video games on a desktop computer. The other advantage, of course, is being out of the studio and on the couch feels more like a break than sitting in front of the computer. I find that I'm in my studio an awful lot.
Right. I know my friend is looking at doing some streaming from her PS4, or even her Switch. Like, but she's has, you know, a big setup in her living room, and she just has a headset that she uses to like actually record her voice. And then she sets up her, like, I don't know, like a tablet or her laptop or something with just the chat room. So she's still able to talk to people and like refer to the chat, even though she's in her living room.
Yeah. No, I think my friend, Ryan Murphy, he's been on the show before. He does that, I think, from his living room. He's got some things set up, especially when he does like 24-hour charity streams in October.
Right. You don't want to sit in a rolling computer chair. Good
Life? No, God, what's the name of the charity?
Extra Life?
Extra Life. Wow, that's terrible. I forgot that. But yeah, no, they do fantastic stuff with the Gamers Inn. He and Jocelyn, they raise a lot of money for I think it's sick kids in Toronto. But yeah, like, so he'll be gaming for 24 hours. So he's got a flip-flop from streaming from console to streaming from computer. And so he's got a whole thing that he sets up. So if I ever did get a console, I would pick his brain about how to set it up for streaming and stuff like that. But unfortunately, that's all the time we have for this episode of the Citadel Cafe. You can find out more about the things that Megan and I talked about today on the show notes. That's at thecitadelcafe.com. We'll have trailers from Detroit Become Human. I'll have a link to the playlists for Etho and Vintage Bleef playing No Man's Sky. Probably a link to the game as well. But if you would like to support the show, you can do that directly. You can head on over to patreon.com/thecitadelcafe. If you find that you get some value out of this podcast, then it would be fantastic if you could find some value to put back into it. It's one of the best ways for us to kind of move the show forward. I'm trying to work with a goal of having one more patron in every month than I did the month before. We're currently at 13 patrons, and September's coming up quick. So if we are going to tick over to that 14, then now would be an excellent time to do it. So if you are interested, you can always drop me a line and ask me about Patreon and things like that. You can also let me know what kind of rewards or goals you'd like to see in the Sizzle Cafe Patreon. Right now, it's just kind of like a simple entry point. If you support the show, you get into the Discord and we all kind of hang out and have some fun. But I don't have any real tiers in place. I am getting some ideas from the Spawn Chunks Discord. We're implementing some Discord roles, so people that support the show at different levels will have different roles. We're working actually with one of the listeners over there that's going to write a bot for the Discord to help with announcements and information, stuff like that. So we might look into some things like that for the Sizzle Cafe as well. So if you have some ideas, by all means, let me know. You can email that the show at thesizzlecafe@gmail.com. And of course, the music was composed by Kevin MacLeod. My name is Joel Duggan. You can find everything I am doing online at joelduggan.com. That includes my illustration and design portfolio, which currently is an outboard link to ArtStation, but that's got some of my more recent commissions and things like that up there. I am available for commissions, and I'm going to be taking some pre-commissions for HalCon. So if you're going to be going to HalCon at the end of October, then look for some ahead-of-time commissions from me over the coming weeks. Listen to Comics Coast to Coast, The Spawn Chunks, and hopefully, I don't think I have another podcast coming. I was getting teased about that the other day. I guested on the Mac Observer podcast this week. That's coming out Friday, but I will tweet and post when that comes out. That's just my name on Twitter and Instagram. I am super, super easy to find. I think that's all I really have to plug. So, Megan, where can people find you and the stuff that you were doing online?
Across social media, Nerdasmic, YouTube, and Instagram are kind of my main squeezes. I also have an Instagram for my personal project, The Heir of Kel'Danan, which we talked about last week. It's linked in my personal Instagram as well. So if you want to find more information about that, it's there, but mostly YouTube and Instagram.
You've been listening to The Sizzle Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two. Hopefully neither one of us dies.